Every June at our UUA General Assembly of Congregations, a special service happens called the Service of the Living Tradition. We begin by inviting all members who have received preliminary and full fellowship in the past year up to the stage, as well as credentialed music professionals and religious educators, and they're all welcomed by our president and representatives of the credentialing offices. We invite the ministers who've retired in the past year too, and all those people at the beginning and ending stages of their ministries sit behind the podium as the ministers who have died in the past year are called into the room by the speaking of their names and honored for their work. Stories are told and a preacher speaks about our faith tradition, our history, our present situation, our possible futures. And we take an offering for the Living Tradition Fund, a pool of money that's used to help ministers who find themselves in unexpected financial challenges, much like the Minister's Discretionary Fund that I manage for our community. Everything about this service is deeply steeped and deliberately focused on Unitarian Universalism. And as someone who's gone to a UU seminary and learned to steep myself in our faith tradition, it was so important to me to walk the stage in 2014 and in 2017 to be honored for my achieving preliminary and then full fellowship. It's touching to see all the ministers being honored and remembered every year. And every year, as I learn more about the relationships and depths and joys and sorrows that ministry brings, this ritual becomes more and more meaningful for me to see. Because it's both a celebration and a practice of remembering the promises we UUs make to each other and how we live out those promises. And because it's a celebration and a practice of remembering the promises and practices of our Unitarian, Universalist, and UU ancestors. We say, and you have heard me say before, that Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition, one that moves and changes as we learn and experience new things. And we also say that rather than being held by a creed or a particular set of beliefs, that we hold each other. This is true for both our beliefs and our polity, our governance structure. Each individual is free in their search for truth and meaning as long as it's a responsible search, meaning it's done intentionally and faithfully. And we hold each other and support one another in those searches. And each congregation is free to make their own decisions based on their individual missions, as long as they're responsible decisions, meaning that they're made with the good of the whole congregation in mind. And our sibling congregations hold us in that work. That's why our promises to ourselves and to each other are important. They are how we hold each other. And that looks different all the time, right? As we learn and experience new things. And so the promises our ancestors made to each other were different from the promises we make to each other, but the core and the purpose of those promises were the same: to live into the values we believe to be true and important. The same is true of the dreams of our ancestors. Olympia Brown dreamed of a nation where women could vote and become ordained ministers, and she worked hard toward those dreams, and she actually lived to see them both come true. At the same time, some of her dreams were left for her descendants to bring to fruition. The culture of patriarchy suffered a hit nationally with the passing of the 19th Amendment, but that amendment didn't offer full autonomy to women. That still had to be worked on. It suffered a hit within Universalism, but other women still had to fight the same fight to be taken as seriously as the men, as seminarians, and then as ministers. And some women still do. just as people in other marginalized communities still do as well in our world and even in our progressive faith tradition. The hymn we sang to open our service this morning is the one that we almost always sing to open the service of the living tradition, as the newly recognized ministers and the retired ministers and the credentialed professionals, religious professionals, come up to the stage to be greeted and honored. We say almost always because we're a living tradition. We have intentionally made the choice to sing something else sometimes. But this hymn, I think, is one of the closest things we UUs have to a kind of creed. It's so deeply ingrained in our history and our tradition. It speaks to how we're guided by the lives and the actions of our ancestors, how we gather to remember them and their work in ways that are both deeply intentional and ever-changing, and how we continue their work in our lives, what they dreamed be ours to do. And so our Unitarian, Universalist, and UU ancestors call us to continue their work. I lift up that James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo died this month, 56 years ago in Selma, Alabama, after answering Dr. King's call to march for voting rights for Black people. Both of these Unitarian Universalist ancestors are known as martyrs to that cause. And for both of them, going to Selma was just one more action they chose to take in their lifetimes of dreaming and working for justice. James Reeb lived and worked in mixed and inner city neighborhoods in Boston and Washington, D.C. His daughter Anne recalled that her father, quote, was adamant that you could not make a difference for African Americans while living comfortably in a white community. And because his wife Marie knew how deeply his convictions were to justice and to peace, she knew there was no question he would go to Selma when the UUA received the telegram from Dr. King asking for their presence in solidarity. He was killed by white supremacists 2 days after arriving in Selma. Viola Liuzzo grew up in poverty and in the midst of racial segregation, discrimination, and hatred. When she was 6, her mother was a manager of a small Georgia grocery store, and Viola took money from the cash register and gave it to a Black child whose family was even poorer than hers at 6. She moved to Detroit as an adult and married a union organizer for the Teamsters. She was twice arrested and pleaded guilty and insisted on a trial to publicize the causes for which she was an advocate. Her best friend, a Black woman named Sarah Evans, said of her, quote, Viola Liuzzo lived a life that combined the care of her family and her home with a concern for the world around her. Certainly harder to do then than it is now. And it's still hard to do now. She became a member of the First Universalist Church of Detroit in 1964. And later that year, she and Sarah drove to New York City to attend a United Nations seminar on civil rights sponsored by the UUA. A year later, on Bloody Sunday, she saw the horror happening in the South on her television and decided to go to Selma. She first attended a memorial for James Reeb at her home church. And then she participated in a local Selma Sympathy March. After that march, she called her husband and told her, quote, there were too many people who just stand around talking, and that she had to help, and that she was going to go to Selma for a week. She asked her friend Sarah to explain to her children whether her mother had gone and tell them she would call home every night. Sarah warned that she could be killed, and Viola replied simply, I want to be a part of it. She joined the March to Montgomery and kept working as a volunteer after the march and was murdered in her car by white supremacists while shuttling Black participants in the march to the airport. When President Johnson called to offer his condolences, her husband told him, "My wife died for a sacred battle, the rights of humanity. She had one concern and only one in mind." She took a quote from Abraham Lincoln that all men are created equal, and that's the way she believed. What they dreamed, the hours to do. And of course, there's always more to do, right? Because freedom and equity aren't a full reality yet. My colleague, the Reverend Kendall Gibbons, added a verse to the opening hymn that we sang this morning, relatively recently. Never from that summons swerve, hark the prophet's living chorus, truth and freedom still to serve. Show the present path before us. As we dream, so shall we dare. Hearts to service, hands to prayer. Clouds of witness call us on, that a nobler day may dawn. So we have our own dreams. Sometimes they're our dreams, born of inequities our ancestors weren't aware of or didn't have the capacity to address. Often they're the same dreams, but with wider scope, as mentioned in our chalice lighting. We dream and work toward a wider vision than Viola Liuzzo and James Reeb dared to, of a culture of equity that's more encompassing than the legislated right for Black people to vote that they helped to achieve. We do that dreaming today and work today. Sometimes I despair that that work will never be done. It's a huge dream, right? Peace and justice and sustainability. It can be hard to see the small steps my generation manages to make, and the sharp opposition to progress by large numbers of very loud people. And it offers me comfort to remember that the dreams of our ancestors are ours to realize, because it reminds me that they knew it would take longer than their lifetimes to achieve. They had faith in us, that we would pick up the work and finish what we could, and then pass it on to those who come after us. That's what Reverend Kendall was writing about, and it gives me hope. So the other promise we make to each other is what Reverend Karen wrote about, what Craig read to us. The dreams of our ancestors are ours to realize, and we carry the blessing of shared commitment as we do that work. Our promises and our work won't be finished in our lifetimes, and they will be continued by those for whom we our ancestors, and in sharing the victories and the losses, the joys and challenges of that work, we are a blessing to each other. May it be so, and may we be so.